Chapter 3. Albert and I are sitting in the Café Meyer by the window. Before us on the marble table are two glasses of cold coffee. We have been here 3 hours now, without yet being able to make up our minds to drink such bitter brew. We have made the acquaintance of most varieties at the front, but this stuff is straight stewed coal. 3 tables only are occupied. At one, a couple of profiteers are making a deal over a truckload of foodstuff. At another is a married couple reading newspapers. And at the third, we are sprawling our ill-mannered rumps over the red plush settle. The curtains are grimy. The waitress is yawning. The air is sticky. And altogether, there is not much to be said for it. And yet, to our minds, there is a great deal to be said for it. We squat there contentedly. We have loads of time. The orchestra is playing, and we can see out the window. So we remain until at last the 3 musicians pack up their things, and the waitress moves sourly in ever-diminishing circles around our table. Then we pay and slope off into the evening. It is marvelous to pass idly from one shop window to the next, not to have to trouble oneself about anything, just to be freed men. At Struben Street, we call a halt. "What about going in to see Becker?" I say.
"Good idea," agrees Albert.
"Let's. That will make him talk, I bet." We spent a good part of our school days in Becker's shop. One could buy every imaginable thing here. Notebooks, drawing materials, butterfly nets, aquariums, collections of postage stamps, antique books, and cribs with the answers to algebraical problems. We could sit for hours in Becker's. It was here we used to smoke cigarettes on the sly, and here too that we had our first stolen meetings with the girls from the city school. He was our great confidant. We go in. A couple of schoolboys in a corner hastily hide away their cigarettes in the hollow of their hands. We smile and put on airs a little. A girl comes and asks what we want.
"We would like to speak to Herr Becker, if you please," I say.
The girl hesitates.
"Can I not attend to you?"
"No, Fräulein," I reply. "That you can't. Just call Herr Becker, will you?"
She goes off, and we spruce ourselves up, thrusting our hands deep into our trousers pockets. That should fetch him. We hear the old familiar tinkle of the office door opening, and out comes Becker, little, gray, and unkempt as ever. He blinks a moment. Then he recognizes us.
"Well, Birkholz and Troska," says he. "Back again, eh?"
"Yes," we say quickly, awaiting the outburst.
"That's fine. And what will you have?" he asks. "Cigarettes?"
We are taken aback and feel rather sheepish. We didn't want to buy anything. That was not our idea.
"Yes," I say at last.
10, please." He gives us them.
"Well, till next time,"
says he, and shuffles off. We stand there a moment.
"Forgotten something?"
he calls from where he stands on the few steps.
"No, no,"
we answer and go. "Well," I say, once we are outside, "he seems to think we've just been off on a bit of a walk." Albert makes a listless gesture.
"Civilian beetle."
We stroll on. Late in the evening, we run into Villy and set off together for the barracks. En route, Villy suddenly springs to one side, and I crouch down likewise. The unmistakable howl of a shell coming. Then we look round, mystified, and laugh. It was merely the screech of an electric tram. Jupp and Valentin, looking rather forlorn, are squatting in a great empty room meant to accommodate a whole platoon. T
Tjaden has not come back yet, apparently. He is still at the brothel, no doubt. At sight of us, their faces beam with satisfaction. Now they will be able to make up a game of Scott. The short time has sufficed for Yup to become a soldier's counselor. He just appointed himself, and now continues to be one for the reason that the confusion in the barracks is such that no one knows any different. It will do to keep him for the moment, his civil occupation having gone west. The solicitor for whom he used to work in Cologne has written to tell him that women are now doing the work excellently and more cheaply, whereas Yup, during his time in the army, will have grown out of office requirements, no doubt. He deeply regrets it, so he says. The times are hard. Best wishes for the future. It's a cow, says Yup glumly. All these years a man has been living for just one thing, to get clear of the Prussians, and now he has to be thankful if he is able to stay on. Well, it's six of one and half a dozen of the other. I'll go 18. Willy has a corker of a hand. 20, I answer for him. And you, Valentin? He shrugs his shoulders. 24. As Jupp passes 40, Karl Brugger appears.
Just thought I'd look in and see what you were doing, he says.
So, you looked in here, eh? Says Willy with a smirk, settling himself down, large and comfortable. Well, I suppose barracks are the soldier's real home, if it comes to that.
41.
46, advances Valentin defiantly.
48,
Willy thunders back.
Christ, this is big bidding.
We draw in closer. Willy leans back luxuriously against the locker and shows us privately a grand. But Valentin is grinning ominously. He has the still more powerful Null Ouvert up his sleeve. It is wonderfully cozy in the barracks here. A stump of candle stands flickering on the table, and the bedsteads loom dimly in the shadows. Then the great chunks of cheese that Jupp has scrounged up from somewhere. He proffers each his portion on the end of a bayonet. We munch contentedly.
50, says Valentin.
The door flings open, and in bursts Tjaden.
Si,
he stutters, and in his excitement develops a terrible hiccup. We lead him with upraised arms around the room.
Did the whores pinch your money?
Asks Willy sympathetically. He shakes his head.
Si, halt,
shouts Willy in a voice of command. Tjaden springs to attention. The hiccup is gone.
Zalich! I found Zalich!
He cries jubilantly.
Boy! Roars Willy. If you lie, I'll pitch you clean out the window.
Zalich was our company sergeant major, a pig of the first water. Unfortunately, 2 months before the revolution, he was transferred, so that we have not as yet been able to get track of him. Tjaden explains that he is running a pub, the König Wilhelm, and keeps a marvelous good drop of beer.
Let's go,
I shout, and we troop out.
But not without Ferdinand, says Willy. We have to find him first.
Ferdinand has an account to settle with Zalich on Schroeder's behalf. In front of Kozola's house, we whistle and catcall until at last he comes fuming to the window in his nightshirt.
What the hell's up with you? At this hour of night, he growls. Don't you know I'm a married man?
Plenty of time for that,
shouts Willy.
Shake a leg. Come down out of it. We found Zalich.
Ferdinand now shows signs of interest.
Honest?
He asks.
As true as I'm standing here, Tjaden
assures him.
Righto, I'm coming, he answers. But God help you if you're pulling my leg.
5 minutes later, he joins us below and learns how matters stand.
We push off. As we turn into Hook Street, Villy in his excitement bumps into a chap and sends him head over heels.
You great rhinoceros!
The man on the ground shouts after him. Villy turns about sharply and stands over him threateningly.
Pardon? Did you speak?
He asks, touching his cap. The other picks himself up and looks at Villy.
Not that I can remember, he answers sullenly. Just as well for you, says Villy. You haven't the right build to be insulting.
We cut across the park and pull up outside the König Wilhelm. The name has already been painted over. It is now called the Edelweiss. Villy reaches for the latch.
Half a mo,
Cazola lays hold of his great paw.
Villy, he says almost imploringly, if it comes to a dust-up, I do the dusting. Is that right? Give us your hand on it.
Right you are,
agrees Villy, and throws open the door. Noise, light, and thick smoke come out to meet us. The clinking of glasses. An orchestration is thundering the march from The Merry Widow. The taps along the counter sparkle. An eddy of laughter is swirling about the bar glasses. A swarm of men stand clustered around them. They are exchanging jokes. Water slops over, mirroring the faces, tattered and distorted. An artilleryman orders a round of schnapps, at the same time pinching the girls behind.
Good pre-war stuff this, eh, Lena? He roars jovially.
We elbow our way in.
So, there he is, says Villy.
With sleeves rolled up, shirt unbuttoned, sweating with moist red neck, behind the counter stands the host, drawing off the beer that streams down brown and golden from under his fat hands into the glasses. Now he looks up. A broad grin spreads over his face.
Hello, you here. What's it to be? Light or dark?
Light, Herr Sergeant Major,
replies Tjaden impudently. He counts us with his eyes.
Seven,
says Villy.
Seven,
repeats Zelig with a glance at Ferdinand.
Six, Han Cazola, by Jove.
Ferdinand pushes up to the counter. He leans with both hands against the edge of it.
Say, Zelig, have you got any rum?
Zelig fusses about behind his row of nickel pump handles.
Rum? Why, yes, of course I've got rum.
Cazola looks up at him.
You're rather partial to it, if I remember.
Zelig is filling a row of cognac glasses.
Yes, I do rather like it, as a matter of fact.
Happen to remember the last time you got tight on it?
No, can't say I do.
But I do,
shouts Cazola, standing at the counter like a bull glaring over a hedge.
Ever hear the name Schroeder?
Schroeder? That's a very common name, Schroeder,
says Zelig casually. That is too much for Cazola. He gets ready to spring. But Villy seizes him and pushes him down into a chair.
Drink first. Seven light, he repeats over the bar.
Cazola is silent. We sit down at a table. Zelig brings us the pints himself.
Good health,
says he.
Good health,
answers Tjaden, and we drink. He leans back.
There now, didn't I tell you?
Ferdinand's eyes follow Zelig as he goes back behind the counter.
My God, he mutters fiercely. And to think how that swab stank of rum the night we buried Schroeder.
He breaks off.
Now, don't come unstuck, says Tjaden gently.
Then, as though Cazola's words had suddenly plucked aside a curtain, that until now had but lightly swayed and shifted. A gray, ghostly desolation begins to unfold there in the barroom. The windows disappear. Shadows rise up through the floorboards, and memory hovers in the smoke-laden air. There had never been any love lost between Kozola and Zelig, but it was not until August of 1918 that they became deadly enemies. We were holding a stretch of battered trench at the time, just in rear of the front line, and had to work all the night, digging a common grave. We were unable to make it very deep because the water in the ground soon began to seep. At the end, we were working knee-deep in mud. Betke, Wessling, and Kozola were kept busy shoring up the sides. The rest of us gathered the corpses that lay about in the area ahead of us and put them side by side in a long row till the grave should be ready. Albert Troska, our section corporal, removed any identity discs or pay books that they still had on them. A few of the dead had already black, putrefied faces. Putrefaction was rapid during the wet months. On the other hand, they did not stink quite so badly as in summer. Some of them were soaked and sodden with water like sponges. One we found lying flat, spread-eagled on the ground. Only when we took him up did we see that there was practically nothing left of him but the rags of his uniform. He was so pulped. His identity disc was gone, too. We only recognized him, finally, by a patch in his trousers.
Lance Corporal Glaser, it was.
He was light to carry, for almost half of him was missing. Such stray arms, legs, or heads as we found, we set apart on a waterproof sheet by themselves.
"That'll do," said Betke,
when we had brought up Glaser.
"We won't get any more in."
We fetched a few sandbags full of chloride of lime. Jupp scattered it about the wide trench with a flat shovel. Max Weil turned up soon after with a few crosses that he had brought from the dump. Then, to our astonishment, Sergeant Major Zelig appeared out of the darkness. As there was no padre handy and both our officers were sick, he had been told off, apparently, to pronounce the prayer for the dead. He was feeling rather sore about it. He could not bear the sight of blood, and besides, he was so fat. He was night-blind, too, and could hardly see in the dark. All this together made him so jumpy that he overstepped the edge of the grave and fell in. Tjaden burst out laughing and called in a subdued voice,
"Shovel, boys! Shovel 'em in!"
Kozola, as it happened, was digging in the trench just at that spot, and Zelig landed square on the top of his head, a good 200 weight of live meat. Kozola swore blue murder. Then he recognized the sergeant major, but being an old hand, this was 1918, he did not let that deter him. The sergeant major picked himself up, saw Kozola in front of him, exploded, and began to abuse him. Kozola yelled back. Betke, who was also down there, tried to part them, but the sergeant major spat with rage, and Kozola, justly regarding himself as the aggrieved party, returned as good as he got. Vili now jumped in also to lend Kozola a hand. A terrific uproar arose from the grave.
"Steady,"
said someone suddenly. Though the voice was quiet, the din ceased immediately. Zelig, puffing and blowing, clambered out of the grave. His uniform was white with the soft chalk. He looked for all the world like a gingerbread baby covered in icing sugar. Kozola and Betke climbed out likewise. On top, leaning on his walking stick, stood Ludwig Breyer. Until now he had been lying out in the open before the dugout with two greatcoats over him. He was suffering then his first bad attack of dysentery.
"What's the trouble?" he asked.
Three men tried to tell him at once. Wearily, Ludwig checked them.
"Anyway, what does it matter?"
The sergeant major insisted that Kozola had struck him on the chest. At this, Kozola flared up again.
Steady, said Ludwig once more.
There was silence again.
Have you got all the identity disks, Albert? He then asked.
Yes,
replied Trotsky, adding softly so that Kozola should not hear it.
Schroeder's among them.
For a moment, each looked at the other. Then Ludwig said,
Ah, then he wasn't taken prisoner. Which is he?
Albert led him along the line, Brugger and I following.
Schroeder was our schoolfellow.
Troska stopped before a body, the head of which was covered with a sandbag. Briar stooped. Albert pulled him back.
Don't uncover, Ludwig, he implored.
Briar turned around.
Albert, he said quietly. Of the upper part of Schroeder's body, nothing was recognizable.
It was as flat as a flounder. The face was like a board, in which a black oblique hole with a ring of teeth marked the mouth. Without a word, Briar covered it over again.
Does he know?
He asked, looking toward where Kozola was digging. Albert shook his head.
See to it that the sergeant major clears off, said he. Otherwise there'll be trouble.
Schroeder had been Kozola's friend. We had never understood it quite, for Schroeder was delicate and frail,
a mere child, and the direct opposite of Ferdinand. Yet Ferdinand used to look after him like a mother. Behind us stood someone puffing. Zalek had followed us and was standing there with staring eyes.
I never saw the like of that before, he stammered. However did it happen?
No one answered.
Schroeder should really have gone home on leave 8 days ago.
But because Zalek disliked him and Kozola, he bitched it for him. And now,
Schroeder was dead.
We walked away. We could not bear to see Zalek at that moment. Ludwig crawled in under his greatcoats once more. Only Albert remained. Zalek stared at the corpse. The moon came out from behind a cloud and shone down upon it. The fat body stooped forward. The sergeant major stood there and peered down into the pallid face below, upon which the inconceivable expression of horror was frozen to a stillness that almost screamed.
Better say the prayer now and get back, said Albert coldly.
The sergeant major wiped his forehead.
I can't, he murmured.
The horror had caught him. We had all had that experience. For weeks together, a man might feel nothing. Then suddenly there would come some new, unforeseen thing, and it would break him down. With green face, he stumbled off to the dugout.
He imagined they pelted you with jujubes up here, said Theoden dryly.
The rain fell more heavily. The sergeant major did not return. At last, we fetched Ludwig Briar from under his overcoats once again. In a quiet voice, he repeated a paternoster. We passed the dead down. Vile lent a hand below, taking them from us. I noticed that he was trembling. Almost inaudibly, he was whispering,
You shall be avenged,
again and again. I looked at him, astonished.
What's got you? I asked him.
These aren't the first, you know. You'll have your work cut out avenging them all. Then he said no more. When we had packed in the first rows, Valentin and Jupp came stumbling up with a stretcher.
This bloke's alive still,
said Jupp, setting down the stretcher. Kozola gave it a glance.
Not for long, though, said he. We might wait for him.
The man on the stretcher choked and gasped intermittently. At each breath, the blood ran down over his chin.
Any use carrying him out? Asked Jupp.
He'd only die just the same, said Albert, pointing to the blood.
We turned him over on his side, and Max Vile attended to him while we went on with our work. Valentine was helping me now.
We passed Glazer down.
My God, just think of his wife, murmured Valentine.
Look out, here comes Schroeder,
Yip called to us as he let the waterproof slide.
Shut your mouth, hissed Brugger.
Cazola still had the body in his arms.
Who?
He asked, uncomprehending.
Schroeder, repeated Yip, supposing Ferdinand knew.
Don't be funny, you bloody fool. He was captured, growled Cazola angrily.
It is Ferdinand,
said Albert Troske, who was standing nearby. We held our breath. Cazola gathered up the body and climbed out. He took his torch from his pocket and shone it upon the corpse. He stooped down close over what was left of the face and examined it.
Thank God the sergeant major's gone, whispered Carl.
We stood motionless through the next seconds. Cazola straightened himself up.
Give us a shovel, he said sharply.
I handed him one. We expected bloody murder. But Cazola merely began to dig.
Allowing none to help him, he made a grave for Schroeder apart.
He placed him in it himself. He was too stricken to think of Zelig. By dawn, both graves were finished. The wounded man had died in the meantime, so we put him in with the rest. After treading the ground firm, we set up the crosses. With a copying pencil,
Cazola wrote Schroeder's name on one that was still blank and hung a steel helmet on top of it.
Ludwig came once more. We removed our helmets and repeated a second paternoster. Albert stood pale beside him.
Schroeder used to sit beside him at school.
But Cazola looked terrible. He was quite gray and decayed and said never a word. We stood about yet a while, and the rain fell steadily. Then the coffee fatigue came, and we sat down to eat. As soon as it was light, the sergeant major came out of a dugout nearby. We supposed he had gone long ago. He stank of rum for miles, and now only wanted to get back to the rear. Cazola let out a bellow when he saw him. Luckily, Vili was by. He sprang at Cazola and held him fast. But it took the strength of all four of us to keep him from breaking loose and murdering Zelig. It was a full hour before he had sufficiently recovered his senses to see that he would only make trouble for himself if he went after him. But by Schroeder's grave, he swore to get even with Zelig. Now there stands Zelig at the bar, and not 5 yards from him sits Cazola. But neither is a soldier any longer. For the third time, the orchestrion thunders out the march from the Merry Widow.
Another round of schnapps, mate,
cries Theoden, his little pig's eyes sparkling.
Coming up,
answers Zelig, bringing the glasses.
Health, comrades!
Cazola looks at him, scowling.
You're no comrade of ours, he grunts.
Zelig takes the bottle under his arm.
No, very well then, that's that, he retorts and goes back behind the bar.
Valentine tosses down the schnapps.
Soak it up, Ferdinand, says he. That's the main thing.
Vili orders the next round. Theoden is already half tight.
Well, Zelig, you old blighter, he bawls. No more field punishment now, eh? Have one with me.
He slaps his former superior officer so heartily on the back that it nearly chokes him. A year ago, that would have been enough to land him for court-martial or in a madhouse. Cazola looks from the bar to his glass and from his glass back again to the bar, and at the fat, obsequious fellow behind the beer pumps. He shakes his head. It's not the same man, you know, Ernst, he says. So it seems to me also. I hardly recognize Zelig now. In my mind, he was so much of one piece with his notebook and his uniform that I could hardly even have imagined what he would look like in his shirt, to say nothing of a bartender. And now, here he is, fetching a glass for himself, and letting Tjalin, who formerly used to be of less account to him than a louse, slap him on the back and call him, "Old fellow, my lad." Damn it, but the world is clean upside down. Vili gives Kozola a dig in the ribs to stir him up.
Well, I don't know, Vili, says Ferdinand, bewildered. Think I ought to give him a smack over the mug or not? I didn't expect it would be like this. Just got an eyeful of the way he's running about, serving, slimy old beast. I just haven't the heart to do it.
Tjaden orders and orders. To him it is a hell of a joke to see his superior officer go hopping about at his bidding. Zelig also has got outside of a good many by this time, and his bulldog cranium glows again, partly from alcohol and partly from the joys of good business.
Let's bury the hatchet, he suggests, and I'll stand a round of good pre-war rum.
Of what? Says Kozola, stiffening.
Rum. I've still a spot or two left in the cupboard there, says Zelig innocently, going to fetch it.
Kozola looks as if he had been struck in the face and glares after him.
He's forgotten all about it, Ferdinand, says Vili. He wouldn't have risked that else.
Zelig comes back and pours out the drinks. Kozola glowers at him.
I suppose you don't remember getting tight on rum from sheer funk once, eh? You ought to be a night watchman in a morgue, you ought.
Zelig makes a pacifying gesture.
That was a long time ago, says he. That doesn't count anymore.
Ferdinand lapses into silence again. If Zelig would but once speak out of his turn, the fun would begin. But this compliance puzzles Kozola and leaves him irresolute. Tjaden sniffs at his glass appreciatively, and the rest of us lift our noses. It is good rum, no mistake. Kozola knocks over his glass.
You're not standing me anything.
Ah, man, cries Tjaden. You might have given it to me, then.
With his fingers, he tries to save what he can, but it is not much. The place empties little by little.
Closing time, gentlemen, cries Zelig and pulls down the revolving shutter.
We get up to go.
Well, Ferdinand, I say.
He shakes his head. He cannot bring himself to it. That waiter there, that's not the real Zelig at all. Zelig opens the door for us.
Au revoir, gentlemen. Pleasant dreams.
Gentlemen, sniggers Tjaden.
Gentlemen. Swine, he used to say.
Kozola is already almost outside when, glancing back along the floor, his eyes light on Zelig's legs, still clad in the same ill-omened leggings as of old. His trousers, too, have the same close-fitting military cut, with piping down the seams. From the waist up, he is innkeeper, but from the waist down, sergeant major. That settles it. Ferdinand swings around suddenly. Zelig retreats, and Kozola makes after him.
Now, what about it? He snarls. Schroeder, Schroeder, Schroeder!
Do you remember him now, you dog? Damn you! Take that one from Schroeder.
His left goes home.
Greetings from the common grave.
He hits again. The innkeeper dodges, jumps behind the counter and grabs a hammer. It catches Kozola across the face and glances off his shoulder. But Kozola does not even wince. He is so enraged. He grasps hold of Zelig and bashes his head down on the counter. There is a clatter of glass. He turns on the beer taps.
There. Drink, you bloody rum keg. Suffocate. Drown in your stinking pig's wash.
The beer pours down Zelig's neck. It streams through his shirt into his breeches, making them swell out on his legs like balloons. Zelig bellows with rage. It is no easy thing to get such beer in these days. At last he manages to free himself and seizes a glass with which he drives upwards against Cazola's chin.
Foul!
Cries Vili from where he stands in the doorway watching.
He should have butted him in the guts and then pulled his legs from under him.
None of us interferes. This is Cazola's show. Even if he were to get a hiding, it would not be our business to help him. We stand by merely to see that no one tries to help Zelig. But Tjaten has already explained the matter in half a dozen words, and nobody is now disposed to take his part. Ferdinand's face is bleeding fast. He now gets properly mad, and quickly makes short work of Zelig. With a hook to the jaw, he brings him down. He straddles over him and bashes his head on the floor a few times till he feels he has had enough. Then we go. Lena, looking as pale as a cheese, is standing over her gasping master.
You'd better cart him away to the hospital, Vili shouts back. Looks to me like a matter for 2 or 3 weeks. Not a very bad case, though.
Cazola is smiling, as happy as a child.
Schroeder, so he feels, is avenged.
That was fine, says he, wiping the blood from his face.
Well, now I must be trotting back to my missus, or the neighbors will be thinking things, eh?
At the marketplace we separate. Jupp and Valentin go off to the barracks, and their boots clatter over the moonlit pavement.
I wouldn't mind going along with them, says Albert suddenly.
I know,
agrees Vili, thinking of his fowl, no doubt.
They're a bit pedantic, the people here, don't you find?
I nod.
And we'll have to be starting school again soon, I suppose.
We stand still and grin. Tjaden cannot contain himself for joy at the mere thought of it. Still laughing, he trots off after Valentin and Jupp. Vili scratches his head.
Think they'll be very pleased to see us? We're not quite so docile as we used to be, you know.
We were more to their liking as heroes, says Carl.
And a long way off, for preference. I'm rather looking forward to the fun, explains Vili. What with our present temper, hardened in the bath of steel and all, as they used to say.
He lifts one leg a trifle and lets off a terrific fart.
12.5,
he announces with evident satisfaction.